you. Thank you. That was perfect. That was just the way my mother wrote it. That was just perfect. How's everyone feeling this morning? You know, I used to speak at, anyone ever been to a Get Motivated event, the big stadium event? Yeah, so I used to speak at those, and I got to know Tommy Hopkins, and he always used to say, "How are you?" And no matter if it was good or bad, he'd say, "Unbelievable." So how are you doing this morning? Unbelievable. Unbelievably bad, unbelievably good. Unbelievable, no matter how you look at it. So I'm originally from New York City, moved to Denver in 93, which is my home. And it was so cold when I got on the plane yesterday, I saw two attorneys with their hands in their own pockets. That was funnier than the reaction I got. You know, there's a big, this is a big convention center, and they have a lot of events going on simultaneously. And I was in the elevator, and I came across these four doctors who were arguing over their favorite type of operation to do. And the first one says, "You know, I really like to operate on librarians because you open them up and everything's in alphabetical order." Second doctor says, "Yeah, I know what you mean. I like operating on accountants because everything is in numerical order." And the third one says, "Oh, I operate once on electrician. You open them up and it's color-coded." And the fourth one says, "I got you all beat. If you ever get a chance, operate on a lawyer." I said, "Why is that?" "Because you open them up and they're heartless, they're gutless, they're spineless, and their head and their butt are interchangeable." I don't belong to the Bar Association, and I don't associate with lawyers. Because generally, lawyers are destroyers in the real estate business. Isn't that true? So, yeah. I help people. When they walk out of my office, they feel better. So I try to make deals happen. I don't do litigation or fight with people. I make deals happen. And it's usually the deals that everyone says can do it. Everyone tells them can't be done. So I'm the guy they come to as a last resort and say, "There's a way to do that." And we get them done. And part of what I do, so you know, my law practice is pretty limited. I have a boutique firm, and a lot of small firms are kind of a jack of all trades and a master of none, you know what I mean? I only do three things, and I do them really well. I do real estate, I do asset protection, and I do, like John Heyer does, I set up the self-directed retirement plans for people to invest in things like business and real estate and so forth. So that's all I do. I don't deal with your neighbor's cat, the divorce, your DUI, because I'm not a jack of all trades. I do three things, and I've been doing them for 32 years, and I do them really, really well. So this is, you know, what my expertise is. Now, how many of you, by the way, how many people are here are not from Ohio? Came in. Oh, great, fantastic. So people came from all around. That's fantastic. I used to run a real estate investment association in Colorado, which was the biggest REIT in the country at one point. I did that for 17 years. We used to do conventions like this, get 1,000 people, and it was a lot of fun. But ran out of time, you know? So I was too busy doing that. So I do my law practice. I speak and write books, and I have my real estate investments and have multiple streams of income that divide my time. Now, it's sort of like when we're talking about today, we're gonna talk about entities and asset protection. It's kind of like the game of football. There's offense and there's defense. So you're gonna learn this weekend a lot of offensive strategies, how to make money, how to accumulate cash flow and so forth. But is it important what you make or what you keep? What you keep, right? So I'm gonna be talking about for the next 90 minutes or so, the defensive strategies. Now those of you who know football, you know the answer, so save it for the people who don't know football as much. Every sports football team has two groups, the offensive team, the defensive team, depending on which side they're on during a play, right? Does the offensive team learn defense? What do you think? Yeah, why does the offensive team learn defense? What? Well, in case of a fumble, right? In case of a turnover, a fumble. What happens if the offensive team, there was a fumble, they go, "That's not my job." No, you got to learn defense even when you're playing offense. And that's the point of what we're going to be talking about. And the legal facts of life I wanted to share with you a little bit. Juries award over $50 billion annually. And half of that is just to Donald Trump. I had to throw a political joke in there. The chances of being hospitalized are 1 in 7. Your chances of being sued is 1 in 3. Now, that's just an average person. You guys are all in business, which means you have customers, you have contractors, you have parties to deal with, so your odds are much, much higher than that. So it's not a matter of if you've been sued, it's just a matter of when and how much and how you deal with it. The top liability professions, landlords and small business entrepreneurs. How many people here are landlords? How many people consider themselves small business entrepreneurs too? How many people have paid enemies, employees? That's what we call them behind their back. So how many people hire contractors? Well, same thing. You're going to have potential liability for them. The average cost of defending a lawsuit, and this is what I'm talking like, you get sued and you settle quickly, is $7,500. That's completely nonsensical lawsuit, and you settle it real quick without going all the way to trial. If you go all the way to trial, 100, 150, 200, 250, 500, depending on what court and how many defendants. If you're in a multi-party lawsuit, then every time your lawyer has to send a letter, they have to send it to 9 different attorneys. So the costs go up by 9. Now, even if you did nothing wrong, has anyone ever been involved in a lawsuit like that where they just sued everybody? The title company, the bank, everybody. And you're going, I didn't do anything here. And it's going to cost you tons of money to either settle it or pay all the way to go. And you don't want to do that. You don't make money in court. I make money in court. You don't make money in court. So you want to stay out of court. And even if you win, you lose. So if you have to pay to get out of a lawsuit that you didn't even do anything wrong, or you pay and go all the way to trial and you win, jury says you're not liable. Did you really win when you had to pay 150 grand in lawyer fees? This isn't TV. I could see you. When I throw the ball, you could throw it back. Just play along with me. Let me tell you a little bit about me, just about my experience. I told you I've been a lawyer for 32 years. I've been a real estate investor for 30 years, so it only took me like 2 years to figure out that working by the hour, even at what I charge, which is 500, it's still trading hours for dollars. I don't care if you make 20 or 500 an hour, if you stop doing hours, you stop getting what? That's right. So I realized very early that I needed to do things that would create passive income that would work when I didn't have to work. Now, I still work, and I don't see myself ever, quote, retiring. I'm an entrepreneur, you know, so my mind is always wants to be productive. I may do a little less of what I'm doing and maybe hire a butler, but I don't see myself ever with a fishing rod. You know, how many people are like that, agree with that? Yeah, I don't see, like, retirement, but, you know, I might slow down a little bit. But I can, but I just choose not to. I've appeared on dozens of major media outlets. I've written 6 best-selling books. How many people have written one of my books before? Okay, a lot of you have. So you can get them on all the major booksellers. I appeared on a lot of CNBCs, Fox. Some of those were a few pounds ago. So what we're going to cover today is I'm going to show you how to protect yourself, to protect your business, protect your family from lawsuits, taxes, liabilities, and other financial pitfalls. How to become legally judgment-proof. Legally judgment-proof. So if someone does get a judgment, they won't be able to collect. How to choose the right entities for maximum protection. And I can guarantee a lot of you think you're safe, but when I explain to you why you aren't, you're going to get a sick feeling in your stomach. And I hate to do that to you before lunch, but I want to be honest with you. You want me to sugarcoat it? You want me to tell you the truth. And how to gain financial privacy, and most importantly, how to get started right away as in now. Because a lot of people will hear me give this presentation and they'll say, I'll do it tomorrow. And like a sinking ship, they're going to wait until they get sued or threatened or default on something to start doing these strategies, and they won't work. They don't work if you're in the middle of a lawsuit. If there's something called a fraudulent conveyance. What that means in English is if you try to get broke in the face of a known liability, it won't work. The court will undo whatever you did. So you say, oh, I'm about to get sued. I'm going to transfer everything to my kids. You can't do that. And there's a look-back period. So the sooner you do it, the better. Okay? Let me tell you a story about one of my clients. Owned in a small apartment building in South Florida, Palm Beach County, but West Palm, you know, the not-so-nice side of Palm Beach. On the wrong, it was actually next to the railroad tracks and on the wrong side of the railroad tracks. And bought it, sold it 4 or 5 years later, made a lot of money, and then literally like a week after the property was sold, he gets served with a lawsuit. Now, in the beginning, he bought it in his own name personally. A lot of people have to do that because banks don't like always lending to LLCs and stuff. Has anyone ever had that experience? Right? So he said, well, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll transfer it into an entity. And tomorrow became next week, and next week became next month, and next month became 6 months. And eventually he put it into an LLC, owned the property for 4 or 5 years, sold it. A week later, he served with a lawsuit. It was alleged that an infant pushed on a screen on the first floor, fell out, and cracked her head on the sidewalk. Okay? And it happened allegedly when? In the first 6 months he owned it in his name. So he was the personal defendant, okay? Because he was in charge personally in the first 6 months, okay? Now, the case got settled. He lost a lot of sleep over it, but it was a pretty big number that it settled for. And you know who that client was? Me. I know this stuff, and I got lazy. I said, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it next week. And my wife gave me such grief over this. She's like, you teach this stuff. You do it as an attorney. How could you be so foolish? Let me be an example, okay? Don't make the same mistake that I made. And what really scared me was, I never heard of this until after I sold it. I had a property manager, because I don't live in Florida. If the property manager knew, that means his knowledge is imputed to me. And if you don't timely report an incident to your insurance company and you get sued 5 years later, what do they say? No coverage. That's what kept me up at night. Because I called my property manager first thing and I said, did you know about this? He says, no. And he's lying. How could he not know about it? It was a small apartment building. And there was like, hospital admission, you know, the ambulance came. It was a real deal. It really did happen. And if it came out at trial that he knew, that means I knew, that means all the legal fees and all the payout would have been on me personally. And that's what kept me up at night. Thank God it settled. And I had to pay a $10,000 deductible, which I was thrilled to pay. Thrilled to pay, considering the amount of the settlement. So don't wait. And then other people think like, nah, it won't happen to me. I'm really nice to my tenants. I treat them like family. Everybody has a convenient memory when it comes to how nice you are to them. Isn't that true? No good deed goes unpunished. So just because you're nice to your customers or your employees or people you do business with or your tenants, that doesn't mean eventually you're not going to get sued anyway. And some people put their head in the sand like an ostrich and think that it's not going to happen to me. I don't need to worry about it. That's naive thinking. That's just naive thinking. So employers and landlords, I said, are very easy targets. Why do you think lawyers love suing employers and landlords? Well, yeah, they have money. If they have a business, presumably they have wealth. If they own real estate, presumably, you know, they have wealth. But who makes up the jury pool? Tenants and employees. What do you think? You're going to get a jury full of your peers of landlords and entrepreneurs and employers? No. You're going to get a jury full of tenants and employees. And everybody hates their boss. And everybody hates their landlord. And when you go to court, it is payback time. So don't think you're going to get a fair trial. You should stay out of court. Now, a lot of people think, well, I'll just get lots of insurance. I don't have to worry about this stuff. And let me tell you something. My first job out of law school was working for an insurance company where they defended claims where their insureds were sued. My job, when they get the claim, the first thing they did was they would give me the file and say, look for a legal way for us not to pay. That's the first thing they do, is see how to get out of paying. Insurance companies are good at two things. Collecting premiums and denying claims. And they're exceedingly good at number two. Anybody who's ever dealt with an insurance company, you know that whatever they offer you is probably a third of what they're authorized. Even on a roof claim, I had damage to roof and windows from a hailstorm. Their first offer was $7,000. I got $88,000 out of them at the end. That's the way they operate. That's why they're so wealthy and they have so much money. Now, the thing about it is, most people get insurance. Insurance is like, you know, the guy wearing the gown. You know when you go to the doctor, you put on the gown, you're all naked, and you say, this isn't so bad, and then you catch what's in the back in a mirror behind you, what's hanging out, your assets. And that's what insurance is like. Now, I'm not saying don't carry insurance. Carry lots of it. But what most people do before they buy a property, they have it under contract, they call up their insurance agent, and they say, oh, I'm going to close in 2 days. I need a binder for the policy. How much? Now, the insurance guy is going to want to quote you the best rate, right? So they're going to give you a standard policy. How much liability coverage do you get in a standard residential policy? Anybody know? You have no idea, do you? That's what you're going to do tonight. You're going to go home and check. It's about $300,000. The average jury verdict in a property liability case is $1.2 million. So who picks up the other $900,000 if that's all you got? That's not a trick question. Let me try that again. Is this the English-speaking group or is that next door? See? Comprende? If you get sued for $1.2 million and you've only got $300 in liability coverage, who's picking up the other $900? We are. You are, okay? So the first thing you have to have is a lot of coverage. Now, some people may have what's called an umbrella. How many people have an umbrella policy? Good. So the umbrella policy will cover $300,001 up to $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, okay? A lot of people think umbrella means more things are covered under the policy. That's not true. It's just more money. So if your primary policy doesn't cover the claim, guess what? Neither does your umbrella. So don't think because you have an umbrella policy that you have ultimate protection. No, you just have more money protection. So let me tell you some things insurance doesn't cover. Intentional acts. So anything you or your employees did as an intentional act is never covered by insurance. Never covered by insurance, by policy. Divorce. You know the divorce rate is 57% in this county? 57%. Do you know that 92% of all statistics are made up right on the spot? Yeah, it's like 50-50, right? Mold and lead claims, generally excluded. You file bankruptcy, IRS audit, contractual disputes. You buy a property from someone, they come back and sue you years later and said you defrauded them or breached the contract or whatever, not covered by insurance. And failure to report claims, as I discussed earlier, that was the number one reason we denied claims with the insurance company. Because something happens and you don't want to tell your insurance company because you didn't think it's a big deal. if you don't timely report an incident that might later lead to a lawsuit, when the lawsuit comes, you're not covered. Not even for the attorney's fees if it's a bunk lawsuit. Not fun. So a lot of people, I'll give you a perfect example. I had a client who had a fourplex, and one of his tenants pulled out the fridge to clean behind it. And there was a flex line to the ice maker that snapped, and water got underneath, and one of the kids came home later from school, slipped and broke his leg. My client didn't report it. 7 months later, he gets a lawyer letter, and his insurance company said, no, we're not covering it. Now, I threatened them, and eventually did cover it. But 7 months, as little as that, not reporting a claim. See, most people don't want to report incidences. Why? You know your rates are going to go up, right? But if you don't report it and you get sued later, ooh. And here's the thing. The statute of limitations, the time someone can sue you, is extended for a child. So if the child is 11, they get 7 years plus another 3 or 6, depending on what state you live in. Not good. Not good. So even if you're just starting out at this, you should employ some of these strategies because, number one, it'll be more confident that if you mess something up, you got some protection. But number two, it's much harder to undo what you've done years later. When clients come to me with 100 properties, it's real hard to rearrange things that when they get used to doing it a certain way. So it's like building a house. We build a house on a foundation, right? What's the foundation made out of? Concrete. What if you built it on plywood? Not good. It would eventually rot and collapse. Same thing with your business. You want to build your business on a foundation of concrete, not plywood. So if something does happen, and it's just a matter of what, not a matter of if, but a matter of when, you will be protected. Now, so number one, go home and check your insurance. Make sure you've got plenty, okay? Number two, you have to have a backup plan because insurance doesn't cover a lot of things. So my bulletproof asset protection system is your backup plan. And there are 4 steps to success. All right, I see people taking pictures. I hate that. And it annoys the person behind you. I'll tell you what I'll do. My email is bill@bronchick.com, my first name at my last name. Go give a donation to Tunnel to Towers or some military or veteran cause, because both of my kids are in the military. Send me a receipt for $25 or more, and I'll send you my PowerPoint. Is that fair?
Absolutely.
All right, good. Thank you. All right, so take a pen and paper and write this down. Step one, appear broke. Now, some of you I see have mastered that. I'm not gonna name names. But I mean, on paper, I mean, you don't wanna drive the Mercedes to go pick up the rents in a bad neighborhood, right? Everybody should have a foreclosure Ford. You know, the old Ford you drive when you pick up the rents, not the Mercedes. Okay? Or you have a property manager who takes care of that for you, like I do. But at least we want to appear broke on paper so we're not, doesn't look like we're worth suing, and that will dissuade litigation, and that's the whole name of the game. That'll get rid of most of the potential claims. Number two, create a liability shield between you and the assets that create a liability. Okay? So we want a wall of protection between us and high-risk assets. Number three, we want to segregate assets, too, according to their risk. We don't want to put everything in the same pot. We want to have separate baskets to limit our risk. And number four, become judgment-proof. And it's legal to do that. Now, some of you might think it's unethical to do that. I mean, OJ is pretty much judgment-proof, right? He owes $25 million in counting to the family of the Goldman, Now he has money, he has assets. For example, he has a multi-million-dollar house in Florida, but in the state of Florida, your homestead is protected from creditors, 100%. So that's legal. He has a pension from the NFL. Under federal law, a creditor can't take a pension. You understand? So there are laws that we can use ethically and morally to make sure that our assets are protected in case of the worst case scenario. I'll get to your question in a minute. We'll get to your question in a minute. All right, so that's the four steps. Let's go through them. And again, timing is everything. You want to start that clock running for the statute of limitations. Okay, because if you get sued next year, it's not as good as you get sued 4 years from now. You're in much better position if you go to court. Does that make sense? So don't, it's like jumping out of an airplane and go, whoops, I forgot the parachute. No, you got to do this when everything is good. So step one, appear broke. We want to hide our assets. Now, how many people own property in their own personal name? Like just their own, that's like putting a kick me sign on your back. Remember they used to do that for nerds at school? They put a kick me sign? You're just begging. You're begging for potential liability. And you know the golden rule of law, right? He who has the gold gets sued. He who has the gold gets sued. So the more you look like a target, the more likely people are going to sue you. It's as simple as that. Okay? Now, let's say that Tony here is a tenant in, my eyes aren't as good as they used to be, Eugene, in Eugene's apartment building, or, you know, fourplex or whatever. So Tony thinks he's got a claim. He feels something that Eugene did was wrong, so he goes to a lawyer's office, okay? And let's say I'll be that lawyer, and I'll say, Tony, sounds like we have a good claim. You just write me a check for my retainer for $10,000 against my $500 an hour rate. We'll be at trial in about 2 years. No guarantees we'll win, but we'll do our best to go get them. How does that sound, Tony?
Not so good.
Not so good, right? You understand it's the quarterback. We got to get rid of the quarterback. Without the quarterback, they can't play the game. And that's what he needs. He needs a quarterback. Now, feeling all rejected and seems like everything's hopeless, he's driving down the highway and he sees a billboard like this. Has someone injured you? Car accident, train wreck, dog bite, mosquito bite? Call 1-800-LET'S-SUE. So Tony goes down to the law offices of Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. I'll be Mr. Dewey. This is how it works, Tony. We don't charge you anything up front. We don't charge by the hour. We'll take your case and pay all of the costs, and when we win and collect, we'll take a third. If we don't collect anything, we don't win, doesn't cost you a dime. How does that sound?
Dewey.
Right. So now Dewey is the quarterback. He's got a quarterback to play the game. Okay? Now, let's say I, on behalf of Tony, sue Eugene, and I get a $3 million jury verdict. What is my fee?
$1 million.
$1 million. Are you sure about that?
Plus cost.
No, I just said one third. I'll pick up the cost. Make it simple math. $3 million, what's my fee?
A third.
A million, right?
No.
You sure about that?
No.
Who said that? If you collect, it's not what you win, the OJ rule. It's what you collect. So my fee is not contingent upon whether I win. It's dependent on whether or not I collect. So what do I want to be certain of before I take this case on what we call a contingency? That I can actually get the money. So let's say we're going to look up the owner of the property on public records, very easy to find. And there's, oh, look at that, all this real estate in Eugene's name. He's totally exposed. So that's my pot of gold. Now, sometimes attorneys look for insurance because that's the pot of gold. But what Tony's described to me is something that insurance wouldn't cover. So I'll take your case. But what a, thank you, you're welcome. By the way, I take expenses off the one third. I just did that to make the math easy. All right, so you know, it's like going to Vegas with someone else's money. Why wouldn't he do it? He has nothing to lose. But what if I search the records and the property he's in is owned by an anonymous entity, and I search Eugene's name up and I can't find anything else in public records? What am I going to say to Tony? $10,000 and down, $500 an hour, I'd be happy to take your case, but I can't do it on a contingency. Quarterback goes home, Eugene takes the ball and wins. Goes home. You understand? This is the game. It's a game. We're just trying to win the game. We got to get rid of their quarterback by any means possible. Play a little dirty. Kick him behind the knee. Grab him by the face and the helmet. Give him a... Hey, it's a game. Who said we're going to play it fair? They're not playing fair, are they? Nope, then we're not going to play fair. So what a lot of people do is, you know, they have it in their own name, or they put it in an LLC. How many people have multiple properties they put in an LLC? Okay. Well, here's the problem with that. When you formed that, you probably went with the Secretary of State online, put in a credit card, put all the information, and your name and your address. So is there any mystery? No. No. So a better way to title property would be to put each property in what's called a land trust. How many people have heard of land trust before? A lot of you have. Okay, good. How many people are using land trusts? A lot of, oh, less. Okay, fewer of you are than said they heard of it, so I'm talking to the rest of you. A land trust is a type of revocable living trust that is created on paper. It's not an entity. You don't file it with the state. It doesn't get a tax ID number. It doesn't file a tax return. In fact, it doesn't even need a bank account. It's just an arrangement between parties, the trustee and the beneficiary. Okay, the beneficiary is the true owner. The trustee is the one who's in name. Does that make sense? So if we set up a trust, now most people, has anyone ever done a living trust for estate planning? Okay, and you put your properties in those? So, you know, the John J. Smith Living Trust, any surprise as to who might be the owner of that trust? That doesn't work. I'll explain to you the right way to do that in 15 minutes. Instead, we put every property in a separately named trust, not the person's name, but something very ubiquitous like 223 Main Street Trust, 441 Oak Street Trust. The trustee should not be you. It should be a friend, relative, family member who's got a different last name. You understand? So when they look it up, they see an anonymous trust, care of so-and-so trustee. Now, when you set up your LLC, you had to name a registered agent. That's the person who accepts legal papers in a lawsuit. And that's a physical address. And most of you put yourselves, I imagine, right? Because you're too cheap to pay $60 a year to a company to do it for you. You can do that. There are companies that'll be your registered agent. And when I file stuff for clients, I file it with complete anonymity, so the public record has no tie to the individual. Is that good? Yeah, absolutely. But with the trust, you get one level more anonymity because trusts are not recorded anywhere. There's no public place you can look up the beneficiary. So it's a generic name trust. The trustee is your friend or relative with a different last name. And by the way, could it be a P.O. box or does it have to be a physical address? It could be a P.O. box. It could be a P.O. box in Alaska. They have what's called virtual P.O. boxes. How many people have one of those? Virtual, Google it, virtual P.O. box. You can have one in any state, any city, and they receive mail for you, and then they scan it and email it to you. And it's cheaper than UPS store. It's like $9 a month. So your trustee in a different state, different last name, P.O. box, it's really hard. See, if I'm Dewey, I'm going, this is complicated. I don't like complicated when I'm working on my dime. Does this make sense? Are you with me?
Yes.
Okay. Like four of you? Okay, thank you. All right, so I'll get to your questions, I promise you. So now each property goes into a separate named trust. Now the advantage is you can't figure out who's the beneficiary on public record. Number two, if you search that trust name in the counties around, no other properties in that name. See, if you own seven properties in one LLC, if they look up the LLC and they'll see your name on public record, they'll search the LLC name and see what else it owns. You understand? I had a presentation I was doing in Los Angeles, and a guy came up to me at the break and he said, I wish I knew about this years ago. I said, what happened? He goes, well, back in the 80s, I went to a Nothing Down real estate seminar with Robert Allen. How many people remember him, right? So I bought like six apartment buildings, nothing down. The mistake he made was he had no money in reserve, so he's doing all the work himself. So he gets one building red tagged and flagged with violations. And so he fixes them, spends all his time in the evenings and weekends while working a job. And then he gets another property and another property because the inspector looked up his name, which was on every property, and saw what else he owned and went, slumlord, I'm going to get all those buildings. So he couldn't finish it quick enough, so they drag him into court in front of a judge, and the judge threw him in jail for 3 months. Now, what happens when no one's around to manage your properties for 3 months? It's like having the substitute teacher come in, right? All hell breaks loose. And he lost everything. And he said, if I owned them in separate trusts, I could have kept up with the violations on one building, but when he searched my name and saw what else I owned, I couldn't keep up. How many people can see the value of this? Good. All right. So now it's like, kind of catch me if you can. And you might be thinking I'm being paranoid about anonymity, but who's watching you? Your competition? The media? Not exactly friendly to real estate investors. Your ex-spouse, attorneys, the government? In the jurisdiction where I own a lot of properties, if you get more than two property code violations, like a dead tree or garbage on your lawn or something like that, in a six-month period, you have to go in front of a judge. And they could fine you, throw you in jail, do whatever. Now, if I have every property in a different name trust, it's not likely I'm going to get three violations in one property in a year. If I own them all in one name, I might get three amongst them. Can you see the value of that? Has anyone ever gotten a property inspection violation notice? Yeah. So that helps a lot too. So land trusts are very effective for anonymity, for separating out the title, so it's very difficult for people to find information. And the Dewey Cheatham and Howes of the world, if they can't find information, they're not likely to take the case on a contingency, and you win. Can everyone see the game? Okay. How many people, if you're not using land trust, you're going to start using land trust? Good. Very good. I did my job. Step two, create a liability shield. So you want to create a liability shield by using corporate entities. So corporate entity could be, you know, LLC corporation, we'll talk about that in a minute. But they provide liability protection. That means if you're the owner and something goes wrong, you're on the hook. If a corporate entity owns it, the corporate entity's on the hook. They're the defendant, okay? Does that make sense? That's the person liable. That's why you want to create that wall. Now, also, if you use a filing entity, like an S corp or C corp, and by the way, how many people have an LLC? Do you know that an LLC can have a tax, the LLCs don't have tax returns, you know that? You have to choose how you want to be taxed. Most people, they're the sole owner or husband and wife, and they don't file a tax return. They file everything on their personal return. I'll tell you in 5 minutes why that's a disaster. But one of the things you can do is elect to be an S corp. And if it's a separate filing entity, you have less risk of audit. If you have everything on your personal return, you're handing the IRS a noose to hang you with. If you put everything on a corporate return or a partnership return, and all you get is a Form K-1, they have to audit that entity to see what you're doing. Do you understand? So which do you think is audited more, your personal return or say an S corp or a partnership return? The individual is the more one likely to get audited, right? There are tax benefits, and not the least of which is FICA tax, self-employment tax, Social Security, Medicare. How many people do not like paying into the nanny system? How many people would rather keep that money invested on their own? Only like half of you? The rest of you want the government to treat you like a baby? No, sir. So we can reduce a lot of that by using the right corporate entities. And finally, when would we use those corporate entities? Well, especially, there's different types of income in real estate. And they're generally divided into two categories. One is passive. Rents is passive. Interest, if you lend money, that's passive income. Then there's earned income or ordinary income. Wholesales, fix and flips, property management, brokerage. Anything you do as a service where you get a 1099, that's earned income. And you pay self-employment tax on that. Even if you're an LLC, filing as an individual. Let me explain that one in a little bit. I'll give you more on that. So it's good for wholesales and flips to have earned income. You should have a corporation, usually an S corp, most people do. Now, S corporation will not eliminate totally, but reduce significantly the amount of FICA, Social Security, Medicare tax you pay. If you say, oh, I don't want to do a corporation, that's a lot of work. I have a corporation, and it's great because what we do is I'm the president, my wife is the secretary, so she calls a notice of the annual meeting at a very fancy five-star hotel that's $600 a night in Colorado Springs. So the annual board meeting and the annual meeting of the shareholders is at this fancy hotel, and who picks up the tab? Corporation. So you can make it fun. You could look at it as work, or you can get creative and look how, because it's not, and when I talk about taxes, people's eyes glaze over. You know, poor John Heyer over there talking about tax, saving taxes. If I said, who wants to work less and make more in their pocket? Who would like to deprive the government of the money they take out of our pockets for foreign wars that we didn't approve of?
Amen.
Amen. Okay. So if we keep more in our pocket, if I say it that way, taxes sound sexy, doesn't it? Tax saving sounds good. Okay. So we're going to be using, you can have, if you have, how many people have an LLC as an individual or as a married couple where they're not filing an S-corp return? They're just putting in their, so if you're doing wholesales, flips, earned income, you're going to want to change that to an S-corp election, and you have till March 15th. It's too late for this year, but you can do it before March 15th for 2024. And that will reduce significantly the self-employment tax that you're paying, the 15.3%. It's a pretty big poke, right? All right, we want to, again, avoid single-member LLCs. And when I say single-member, it could be husband and wife, or just one person, because husband and wife can be still a non-filing entity. We call that disregarded. So when you have a single owner, single member LLC, it's disregarded, meaning it doesn't file a tax return. The member, the owner of the LLC, claims the income and expenses. So if you're an individual and you're flipping houses, where are you claiming that income and expenses? On your personal return, Schedule C. That's earned income. And you will pay what on that? Self-employment tax. So generally, you should avoid single owner LLCs. And I know a lot of you have them and you're wondering, well, my attorney or my accountant said to set it up this way. Well, they're a knucklehead if they know anything about what you do. It's easier because you don't have to file a separate return, but let me tell you why it's worth it. 15.3%. Is it worth it? What's cheaper, $15,000 a year on 100 grand of income, or paying an accountant $1,200 to file a return? Can you do that math, or do I need to explain it again? You know what I'm talking about. Okay, now there are exceptions to the rule. Exceptions. There are two. If the sole member of your LLC is another entity, like another LLC, that's okay, as we'll discover. And the other exception is if you choose an S-corp election. So if you're an individual or married couple doing wholesale, how many people do wholesale flips, earned income? You should be doing it in an S-corp. And when I say S-corp, it could be an LLC electing as an S-corp. Does that make sense? So you can convert it. You have to do a new operating agreement, file some forms with the IRS, but it's not that hard to do. Make sense? And that way you will A, reduce your risk of audit, and B, pay less taxes. Or should I say pay fewer taxes? I'm not sure on that one. Less taxes? Fewer taxes? Either way, it's a good thing. All right, so now what about if your husband and wife LLC with non-earned income, rental income? How many people do that? Okay, so you're reporting on your personal return schedule E. That's not as bad because you won't get hit with the self-employment tax, but the audit rate is much higher on a personal return than if you file as a partnership and get a K-1 back to yourself. Because there's nothing for the auditor to see on your personal return. They have to audit the partnership return, and those are the lowest percentage audited returns. How many people think it's worth paying $1,000 a year to reduce your risk of audit by about 900 times? All right. When we put it all together, it's going to make a lot of sense. Now, how many people already have a corporate entity again? Raise your hand. Okay. Is your corporation or company safe or LLC? Interesting survey by 1,000 lawyers in the business said 95% of people are operating small businesses or operating under a false sense of security. Why? Because all they did was the basics. They went and filed with the state. They don't have documents. They don't have minutes. They don't have meetings. They don't document resolutions and things like that. So there are, for corporate, you have corporate protection under an LLC or corporation, but there's three exceptions to that rule. Number one, if you don't keep proper records. You know that black book, vinyl book you got from Legal Doom, Zoom? That's collecting dust that you never filled anything out on? If you get audited or sued, you're toast. Okay? How many people haven't had an annual meeting in their company in a long time? Come on, admit it. Yeah. There is a Ritz Carlton in this town, right? You can do it there. Or you can go to some fancy hotel, whatever, and hold your corporate meeting there and write it off. Number two, if you engage in illegal or fraudulent activity, the judge is going to pierce your corporate veil anyway. And the third one, the big one, is the company assets themselves are not safe. If you own everything in one LLC and your LLC gets sued, okay, your home is safe, your personal home, and your car, and your personal bank account, but what if 90% of your wealth is in your properties? What does that do for you? Nada. How many people's bulk of their wealth is in real estate? Yeah. So the company assets, why step three, we want to segregate assets. We want to segregate assets. So usually we do that in an LLC. And most people put everything in one LLC, which is better than in your own name. But if you filed it with the state, they know who the owner is, you. No anonymity. And if one property creates a liability, all the properties are exposed. Is that correct? Yes or yes?
Yes.
Yeah. So one lawsuit can lead to loss of all your properties. Now, what some people do is they segregate and put everyone in a separate LLC. How many people do that? Good. One. Just one. Are they single-family houses or are they, like, multifamily? And here's the challenge with that. First of all, it's overkill. It's expensive and time-consuming. You'll be so busy having corporate meetings with yourself, you won't have time to buy real estate. How are you going to keep up all those minutes? And you have to have a separate bank account for every entity. Okay. Number two, it may not work in court. You could lose everything. So imagine we walk into court. I'm still representing Eugene. I say, Judge, my client has 61 properties, each in a separate LLC. This guy fell on one. We'll give him that property. The guy walks into court with a body cast. Like that, you know, up to, with a collar. And you're telling the judge that the $100,000 in equity in this property is going to satisfy this guy. The other lawyer is going to say, don't fall for it, judge. It's all Eugene. He owns them all. We want everything. Now, what do you think the judge is going to do? You're not leaving him with a good option. So you got to be able to throw him a bone. Maybe two or three properties in an LLC and then move on to another LLC. Does that make sense? Because that's better than losing everything. But if you get too cute, in lawyer terms, they say you have to be able to walk into court and say it with a straight face and not crack a smile. So you make an argument that he has 76 properties and they're all separate, and you don't have separate bank accounts, separate minutes, separate meetings, separate books, separate records. It's really hard to do. Does that make sense? So people always ask me, well, how many properties in an LLC? And I always give the lawyer answer. It depends. It depends on how much money, time, effort you want to spend doing this. Depends on what state you live in. California, it's $800 per LLC per year. In Ohio, it's pretty cheap. So it depends. Also depends on the value of the properties, the risk of the properties, the equity. And there's no anonymity of ownership still, because each LLC is tied back to you. Okay? So better than just segregating is layering and segregating. So now you'll see, I'm not saying land trust and no LLC. What I'm saying is combine them. So every property is in a separate land trust, so they can't cross-reference. There's nowhere to look up the owner, the true owner, just the trustee at a P.O. box. And then every two or three properties, we put it into an LLC as the beneficiary of those trusts. That's how we get anonymity at the first layer and liability protection at the second layer. Is this starting to make more sense now?
Yes.
Yeah, because a lot of people always ask me, is it an LLC or is it a trust? It's both. Because once they peel back the first layer, oh, there's another layer. If you're just the beneficiary of the LLC, there's no liability protection. It's just for anonymity. The land trust doesn't protect you from liability. It's just a smokescreen. Anyone here from Missouri? And out of Missouri, they say the more you muddy the waters, the harder it is to see the bottom. That's what we're trying to do. And if you think this is a little complex, how many people think this is complicated a little bit? Admit it. Imagine the poor schmuck of an attorney representing Tony, trying to unravel, because they only see the top layer. They don't see everything else on public record. So if you can master this, you're going to dissuade the Dewey, Cheatham, and House of the world, and you will win. Does that make sense? Okay. So a land trust is an agreement. It's a contract. And the parties to that contract are the trustee, your friend or relative, different last name, and your LLC is the beneficiary. So they're doing it on your behalf. Now, this came about many, many years ago in feudal England, where if you own property, you had to fight for the king's army unless you were too old. So if someone who was younger would put his property into his uncle's name, who was too old, and say, hey, uncle, if anyone asks, it's yours, but between us, it's really mine. That was the first form of trust. Now we do it in writing. You understand? So the trustee is what we call in name only. He doesn't really own it. He just does what the LLC tells him to do. Okay? And what if your trustee dies? The trust agreement has a backup. What if your trustee disappears? You can fire him. What if the trustee gets sued? It's not his property. Any other trust questions? Or did I cover those all? Yes. Should you have a different trustee for each land trust? You know, in an ideal world, that would be great. But as a practical matter, do you know 71 people you could trust that much? I don't think so. When I do this in California, the most common thing is, I don't trust anybody. Well, that's a California problem. Yes? Can an LLC be a trustee? Yes. However, they can serve process or summons on an LLC because it has a registered agent. And it has to be registered in that state. It can be, but having a person at a P.O. box in Alaska is much more effective. You can, but it's harder to do what you want to do, which is the anonymity part. So I generally don't recommend it unless you just have no other option. Okay? All right, step four. Become legally judgment-proof. So the entity of choice for this is what we call a family limited partnership. How many people have heard of this before? FLP, or family limited partnership. How many people have one? A few do. Okay, good. They're great for estate planning. You know, I know the exemption for estates is $13 million right now, but that sunsets in 18 months. So depending on who's in charge, which corrupt party, that was a joke. It was funnier than I got the response to. Depends which corrupt party's in charge. They may go back to $5 million or $3 million is the exception. How many people plan on living a long time and dying wealthy? Good. Not me. I'm spending it all. The last check is to the funeral parlor, and I hope it bounces. I'm just kidding. No. Proverbs. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. So, yeah, question. Say again? Oh, no, no, no. If you have a $50 million estate and you're doing valuation discounts, you will be audited. But if you have a $5, $10, $15 million estate, very low risk of audit. Very less risk. Because I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but it allows you to discount the valuation of your estate, and people who have $50 or $100 million are claiming valuation discounts in excess, and the IRS says, there's millions of dollars at stake here, we're going to audit it. But the average person, no. Very, very, partnerships at the lower level are the lowest audited return. Okay? Why does the IRS audit personal returns more? Because it's statistically, they get more money out of people. You know, and it might be because they think they're unsophisticated, like a contractor, electrician, a plumber who just does a Schedule C, you know, probably has sloppy records. The IRS is going to get money out of that. All, you know, all these 80,000 new IRS agents they're hiring, you don't think they're going after Elon Musk. They're going after what I just described, the guy who makes $300,000 or $400,000 in his own business and has lousy records. People who do business in corporate returns, less audit risk, because they, when they audit statistically, they get less money. That's the reason, okay? All right, so family limited partnership, first of all, you file this with the state like an LLC. It's been around since 1922. Now, why this and not an LLC? Because LLC law with asset protection is in flux right now. Different courts, different states are coming to different conclusions, and every state has a different LLC law. Almost every state except for one, I think it's California, follows the uniform limited partnership law. So it's all the same in all 50, in 49 states. It's proven. It's been around since the 20s. Not saying LLCs won't give you asset protection. The question is, what state are you in? How many people do you have? It varies. So let me show you how we put it together. So a partnership has partners. What do we call the owners of an LLC? Members, okay? And who runs an LLC? What do we call that person? Manager. In a limited partnership, we have partners. So we have general partners who are like managers, and they run the show. They're in charge, like managers of an LLC. The limited partners put up the dough. So they put up and shut up. Has anyone ever invested in a limited partnership before in a syndication? A few of you have. So a contractor or developer might form a limited partnership to be the general partner and get a bunch of doctors and dentists to put up money as limited partners. And they have no say-so, but they have no liability either. The general partner is running the show. They are great for asset protection. There's a 100-year court history for the protection of a family limited partnership. Now, if you're not a family, I'll show you in a minute how you can use this anyway. So a family limited partnership, we usually do is we make a corporation, and that could be an LLC taxed as a corporation. So six of one, half dozen of the other. And then the husband and wife would be the limited partners. The corporation only owns 1% as general partner, and then the husband and wife between them own 99%. Okay. So assets in a family limited partnership are judgment proof. Let me explain what that means. That means if someone has a judgment against husband or wife, they can't get to the assets in the company. They can't take their interest in the company either. They're only entitled to what they're distributing out to the partners. Who's in charge of that? The general partner. Who owns the general partnership? The husband and wife. So what if husband says, I want a distribution, and wife says, no. It's got to be unanimous consent. And a creditor wants money out. And there's disagreement amongst them. How much does the creditor get? Jack squat. Okay? Jack squat. So let me give you an example of how this works. Let's say, I know a million is not a lot these days, but I wanted to keep the math simple. So let's say this family and partnership had a million in assets. And general partner is their corporation, owns 1%. And husband and wife own 49.5% each as limited partners, okay? Now, if this was profitable, let's say there was $100,000 in annual net income. Now, many of you know, or maybe you don't know this, that if you earn money, profits, in a pass-through entity, that would be an S-corp or a partnership, whether you take the money out to yourself or whether you leave it in the company, you pay tax on that money. You know that, right? If you didn't know that, you know that now. If you're a member of an LLC that's a partnership or a sole proprietorship or an S-corp, you may as well take the money out because you're getting taxed on it either way. But sometimes people might not distribute out the money. Why wouldn't you want to distribute out the money? You want to buy something else. You might want to reinvest in something else. That's a legitimate reason. So let's say there's $100,000 in annual income, so the general partner would be getting $1,000 in income attributable to him. And the way it's done is what's called a Form K-1. That's a form that the partnership sends each partner and the IRS, so the IRS knows what each partner made. Does that make sense? Now, you could distribute it out to the partner or you can leave it in. Who's that up to? The general partner, okay? And each husband and wife would get $49,500 for a K-1, whether they took the money out or whether they left it in. There'd be taxable income on that money. Does everybody follow the math so far? Okay. So let's say a lawsuit comes along. There comes Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. And they got a judgment against husband. Now, that $49,500 a year that's being distributed to husband would go to whom? Would go to the creditor. Who controls distributions? The general partner. Who owns the general partner? The husband and wife. They disagree. He says, I want. She says, no. I think we should reinvest that money. How much is distributed that year to the husband? Zero. How much does the creditor get?
Zero.
You see, it's stalemate, detente. This is where you can settle for pennies on the dollar because there's even something worse for the creditor. So If money earned is not distributed, it's still taxed. And the creditor's entitled to the distribution of husband. Who's liable for the taxes on the phantom income that never got distributed? Think about this one. Who would pay the tax? In an IRS revenue ruling during the Carter administration, the IRS opined that whoever's entitled to it has to pay taxes on it. So the partnership would send a K-1 to the creditor for $49,500, and the creditor would get the tax bill on the money it never received. You know what's great about that? You could settle for pennies. Now, lawyers know this, by the way. They're not stupid. When you start explaining in litigation to the plaintiff's lawyer that everything is in a family limited partnership, they know they can't touch it, and if they try, they're gonna get taxed. They know this, okay? And you can settle or just wait it out. Let's say this partnership has a 50-year life. They'd have to wait another, whatever, 40 years in order to get to it. Unless you lived it to your kids and your grandkids, and it went on and on and on and on. So now, I threw a lot at you in a short period of time. Who's thoroughly confused? Admit it. Okay, let me put it all together. Keeping in mind that there's not a cookie cutter formula for everybody. Everybody's got different goals, different wants, different needs, different assets, lived in different states, cost, time. But let me give you a blueprint, if I may. Where would we put the properties? How would we title them at the county? In land trusts, okay. And the beneficiary of the trusts would be one or more LLCs. Good. What do we call the owner of an LLC? Member. Now, if we left it like this, husband and wife could be the members of those LLCs and file partnership returns. That'd be three extra returns a year. Or if you expanded it out to more properties, it might be 7, 8, 9, 10. That's the way I used to do it, until I come up with a better idea, which is to have these LLCs all owned by a parent company, and the parent company, let me explain parent company. General Motors is a parent company. It owns subsidiary companies called Buick, Cadillac, Chevy, and other crap. No, I just insulted someone driving a Cadillac. I'm sorry. The parent owns the subsidiary. So these LLCs would be subsidiaries of a parent company. And what would that parent company be, you think? Family limited partnership. Right? Now, what does this do for us? Remember I said single-member LLCs were no good? The exception was what? If the member is another company. So in this case, a limited partnership files a tax return as a partnership. So all these properties are reported not on trust returns, not on LLC returns, but on one partnership return. Who likes one return better than 10? Oh, I thought you should say so. So everything would report on one, but for liability purposes, it's separate. Does that make sense? Sometimes it's confusing because under federal tax law, everything is ignored but the family limited partnership. But under state law, it's all separate entities for liability purposes. Question. The family limited partnership is a partnership. It's a partnership. It files a partnership return. It has general and limited partners, as I just described. Now, remember we said a corporation or LLC taxed as a corporation, whatever you prefer, would be the general partner. And who would be the limited partners? A lot of mumbling here. It sounds like an Elton John song. I can't understand it.
All your
The husband and wife are the limited partners. Now, if one tax return, well, the corporation would file a tax return. Yes, all the properties we reported on one partnership return. Yeah, and the husband and wife would get a K-1 with their share. So it takes it off your personal return, puts it on a partnership return, which at this level of income is low audit rate. Okay? And we've already talked about how hard it is to get through the back door of a family limited partnership. And from the front door, we've got land trusts and LLCs protecting us. Now, let me give you the lawyer disclaimer. Actual results may vary. Is it foolproof? No. Because judges do whatever the hell they want sometimes. Right? Ah, I'll get to that question. How do you do it with a third person? Hold on a second. I liken this stuff to a bulletproof vest and a tank. Anybody here a police officer or know someone who's a police officer? They wear bulletproof vests. Can you get shot in the face? Yes. But would you rather still wear the vest? If you're out has anyone ever served in the military? Would you rather be out shooting, or would you rather be in a tank? Tank. Can a tank get blown up by an Apache helicopter? Yes, it's not perfect. But I'd rather be in a bulletproof vest in the tank than naked out in the field. Does that make sense? You put on the best armor you can. Okay? It's not 100% foolproof, but in most cases, you'll be able to settle for pennies on the dollar before it even begins. Okay, so the question back there was, what if you're just a single person? Can you be a family limited partnership?
No, my question was, if I structure my portfolio this way, then I can have partner A, partner B, partner C. How do I protect?
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you already have a partnership with other unrelated people?
Yes.
So that interest in that partnership could be owned by your family limited partnership. So right now, you're a member of a partnership or an LLC, right? So you'd assign that interest to your family limited partnership. Does that make sense? Question over here. Yeah. No, no, these LLCs are disregarded, single member. No, the corporation would be over here, the general partner. Now, if you're a single person, could you own a corporation as your general partner and you be the sole limited partner? Sure. Sure you can. You just can't be a partner with yourself. It's not like me, myself, and Irene. I mean, you have to have a separate taxpayer to generate a partnership. Yeah. I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, I mean, you were saying that the way you were setting up the family limited partnership is bulletproof, nobody can sue you, right?
No, they could sue you, but they can't execute a judgment on your interest and your distributions.
But can you get any money out and live on that money while this is going?
Can I give my wife a distribution?
Oh, okay.
The general partner in my agreement has sole authority to distribute to whomever and in any amount they choose and whenever. That's beautiful. Yes, question. Say again?
Why doesn't everyone?
How many people have a self-directed IRA? Do you know that 3% of America has them? They just don't know. You know that 50% or more of America doesn't even have a will. Why don't they do them? You know Ernst from Ernst & Young died without a will. Rockefeller, one of the senior ones, died without a will. People just, they don't think ahead. They just don't think ahead. So this puts it all together with everything we talk about. And it's like, kind of like lawyer repellent. You know, your deep woods lawyer off. Spray it on and the lawyers go away. Okay, you get a question.
How does something like this work in a variable
in a marital property state? You mean community property?
Yeah.
Where what's hers is hers and what's yours is hers? That's a consideration that we take into account in mixed marriages, prior kids, and things like that. That could be all dealt with in a living trust. How many people have living trusts? See, what most what most estate planning attorneys do is they put all the properties in the living trust. No protection, no anonymity, disaster. Instead, could we make the limited partners their living trusts? So everything dumps at the bottom into a trust. So what are you leaving to your family? The keys to the family limited partnership and everything that flows from it. Does that make sense? Much easier to do than put everything in the trust. Yeah. If husband and wife both get sued, they could take a salary out of the corporation, and depending on what state you live in, that may be exempt. Lots of ways to do it. Thank you. Yeah. You got to speak up. Mm-hmm.
And I had it fixed.
Uh-huh.
And this was back in August, but I never reported it to the insurance company because the cost to fix it was below the deductible. Now,
Wait. Did the insurance company pay it or no? You did it outside.
I did.
You got to report that.
So you said it needs to be reported in a timely manner. What is considered?
What's considered a timely matter to report it? I'll give you the lawyer answer. It depends. It depends what their definition is. But I don't think that's too late. It's only a few months ago, but I would report it. I wouldn't let that go. Yes, ma'am. There's noise next door. I'm sorry. Yeah, so you could be the sole limited partner, 99%, and you can own a corporation to be the general partner. That makes a partnership. And then someday, if you have a partner, don't give them any of this. Keep that outside of it. Prenup. Yeah.
So is this an all or nothing proposition, or is there a way to lend yourself into
That's a great question. Is this an all or nothing, or can you build this in pieces? The answer is, it depends. At the very least, get your properties out of your name. LLCs below it. If you've only got two or three properties, then maybe you can add the family limited partnership later, but do have an estate plan, a living trust, a will, and all that. It's so important to have that stuff because you don't want to leave a mess. And the worst thing that can happen is you build this empire and your kids don't know anything about it and they sell everything and dismantle what you've done. That would be a horror, wouldn't it? How many people think that would be a horror? All your hard work and they sell it and buy a car. So I set up estate plans for people where they can't do that. And actually, I put together a course that's coming out in a month called Real Estate Investings for Teens and Young Adults. Number one, to get them into your business, but number two, maybe for your, you know, ignorant 40-year-old kids, basic real estate principles so they don't let it fall apart when you're gone. Would that be important? Yeah. Yes. You're saying stacking trusts under trusts. It might be overkill. Yeah, sometimes simpler is better. I'm not saying it's wrong, but how far do you want to take this? Right. Back there, gentleman with the white lanyard.
How does the land trust
Do what?
To put debt on a property.
Oh, that's a good question. So can I refinance a property that's in a land trust? It depends. Fannie and Freddie, no. They won't let you do anything but your own name. But like my local commercial branch bank, you know, I am in Colorado, they don't care. You know, smaller branch banks. Wells Fargo, a little tougher. Chase, no. Don't bother. Chase is the worst business bank in the world. Never deal with them. Good personal one. Terrible business one. But some lenders will do, like the SCR lenders will do that. Plus, the interest rates are 9%. What are you doing? What are you doing refinancing properties at 9%?
I'm thinking more about the initial purchase.
Why are you buying at 9%? Take them subject to someone's 3% loan. That's another time. Just got topic for another time. Back there, ma'am. I lost you after the third word. Oh, the reporting rules. Trusts are not within that. Corporate entities are. You know the new rule? They're making everybody disclose to the federal government and they're building a database. First of all, it's unnecessary. The IRS has this information already. Second of all, trusts are not corporate entities. So this is another reason to use them. But what if they add trusts? Who would we make the beneficiary of the trust be? Another trust. Title companies are now collecting this information at closing now. I did a closing last week. They asked a federal form to fill out who are the principals of this LLC. Not fun. Yes. The general partner can be a regular corporation or an LLC electing to be taxed as one.
C-corp or S-corp, does it matter?
Not for this purpose. No, that's a tax issue. Probably an S-corp. All right, I got to go. I got to move on. And if I'll stay afterwards, all the questions you want, as long as you buy me lunch. So, average lawyer fees to set something like this up, as I described, are $8,000 to $12,000. But, you know, it's like an insurance policy. It's not like an annual thing you pay every year, right? Now, but it's kind of like the Meineke muffler man used to say, you could pay me now or you could pay me later. Trust me, it costs more later. Who would like to save money and figure do some of the paperwork themselves? How many people think they could do some basic paperwork? You know, my paralegal does 90% of my paperwork. I just meet with a client and hand it off to her. No, she's very capable, but she's not a PhD in rocket science. Does that make sense? So I have a home study program called the Bulletproof Asset Protection System. It comes in 4 volumes. And by the way, you get free updates for life. Yours. Not mine. I made a deal with God. I'm going to live as long as Moses. 120 years. Does God ever break a promise? No. No, I just better live up to my part and be a good boy. So volume 1 talks about all the strategies, the asset protection. I go way in more in detail, irrevocable trust, offshore trusts, and all the tax and asset protection estate planning strategies. Volume 2 is corporations, what state to incorporate, step-by-step instructions, all the forms that you need to do it, how to keep minutes and so forth, especially if you already have an entity and you haven't been doing it. I'm not saying to go backdate anything, but let's just say it would be better if they were there than if they weren't there, if you know what I mean. Volume 3 goes into land trusts. I have the forms for each and every state. Now, land trusts are not valid in Louisiana and Tennessee. But there are other strategies I explain in the course that work for that. So I have a state-by-state guide, so when some dopey lawyer, title company, broker says, they're not valid in this state, I give you the citation. They're valid in 48 states. Volume 4 goes into LLCs and family limited partnerships, how to set it up, how to do it. You know, most lawyers are charging $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 for a family limited partnership. That's a pretty big poke. I usually charge $3,500. I'm probably too cheap. How to do hybrid LLC, S-Corp. So if you already have what I described as bad, an LLC that's not an S corp and you're the sole member, I have all the forms and instructions to convert it, and you should do that in January because you have till March 15th. So the whole program, it's got four manuals. It's got 2 days of recorded video from a boot camp I just did 2 months ago, so it's completely up to date. And I have forms in there for each and every state, for each and every entity, hundreds of forms that would cost you thousands of dollars to go to a lawyer if you did them on your own. The investment is just $19.97, a paltry fee compared to me doing it for you. Now, by the way, if you want me to do it for you, just call my office. I'd be happy to charge you $12,000. But it's not that hard to fill out forms. Like a land trust is easier than filling out a fishing license. There's not that many blanks. It's not like programming a VCR clock or a microwave clock. It's easier than that. It's not that hard to do. How many people would like it for free? Of course you would. You know why I wouldn't do it for free? Because you won't do it. You won't do it. You got to have an investment in something in order to play. So here's the deal. You need the system. The price is $19.97. You want to pay zero. I'll split the difference, divide by two, and it's just $9.97 today. That's a super deal. Now, what you're going to get is all the stuff on a memory stick today, videos, forms, PDFs, and it comes in a nice little briefcase, like a little briefcase that you open up. It's really cute. I wish I should have brought one up here. So you carry out a little briefcase. So you're not carrying home big volumes of stuff. It's all digital. Plus, within 3 days, you're going to get an email from my office with the online version, and that is free updates for life. So you're getting both, okay? You're getting now, as you need to take something home now, right? I can't leave you empty-handed. So that I give you to do. Now, for the first 10 people, I can't do this for everybody because I don't have the time. But I am going to offer you a free Zoom consultation. It's a $500 value. So after you've had like a month to go over the stuff, there's a certificate on the stick. Email it and set up an appointment, and we'll do a Zoom to review your situation and the way you envision it, and I'll give it a once-over and give you my stamp of approval. Is that good? Because if you go to another attorney locally, they're going to charge you thousands and thousands of dollars because it's not his work. He doesn't understand it, right? Or she doesn't understand it. People have come to me as a lawyer and said, I got your course, and I knew more than the lawyer I was interviewing. And they had to go to four different lawyers before they found one at $500 an hour. So it's really a steal. Getting sued is not fun. How many people have ever had their car broken into? Remember that sick feeling that someone stole from you? Well, imagine a lawsuit. It's like going to an ATM machine, turning around and seeing this. You can fix broken glass and replace what's in your car, but a lawsuit could drag on into a multi-year, multi-thousand dollar nightmare, especially if you're not a lawyer. They don't really scare me that much because I'm a lawyer, right? But people who have never had law experience, it's terrifying. It'll keep you up at night. It'll drain you emotionally. So don't wait until that happens. Do it now. If you're just a beginner, start with the steps and build it up as you go. And again, you get a consultation Zoom with me to go over it for the first 10 people who get the program today. Now, three frogs are sitting on a log. Two decide to jump off. How many frogs are left?
Three.
Why? They just made a decision. Now, some of you at least made a decision you want to do this. You raised your hand earlier. So it's time to get up and do something about it. Am I speaking English? Take the credit card to the back. What do they take? Credit cards, checks, cash, guns. I like guitars. If you got an old like 57 Les Paul, I'll take that in trade. I want to thank you for being here. Thank you. Can I? Before you leave, can I say a prayer over you? Would that be okay? Okay. I'm Jewish, so this is from the Old Testament. May the Lord bless and keep you. You're interrupting God. I'll get to you afterwards. May the Lord bless and keep you. May he turn his face towards you and be gracious to you. May he lift his countenance upon you and grant you peace.
Amen.
Thank you. Amen. Thank you. You interrupted my prayer.
Should you make your children part of your limited partnership?
At some point, yes. That's for estate planning.
Is it better to leave your limited partnership interest to them than estate planning, or mm-hmm. have them be like 1% of you be 49%, 48.5%?
With the family limited partnership, the idea is once you're getting over the exemption limit, you start gifting shares to your children, your adult children.
Right.
So then at the end, if you only own 20%, but you're still the general partner in control, the IRS will value that at a major discount.
Okay, so you get your full exemption that mm-hmm. way. So you start. Mm-hmm. My kids are getting ready to turn adults. And
mm-hmm.
So, okay, why do you think land trusts aren't legal in Tennessee? I'm an attorney. I'm in Tennessee.
There's a court decision where they argued over the jurisdiction of who gets the estate tax. So they had to come to that conclusion to get the estate tax. And California, you can use it. It's not illegal. You're not going to go to jail.
Okay.
It's just it's not valid, whatever that means. So a title company might not insure it. Now, in California, they did the same analysis and came to the other conclusion. They are valid in California, so California can get the tax.
Okay.
So it was in the context of a state tax. That's when it came up.
I know people are using them in Tennessee, and I was really
Yeah. What you could do, I have in my course a personal property trust. It's for non-real estate. Form an LLC and list the member as the trust. Total anonymity.
Well, I mean, I have a large farm in a trust.
And right. You got series LLCs there, too, because those are anonymous, too.
Okay. Thank you.
There's other ways to skin the cat, and those of you who get in the program, we'll have a Zoom, and we'll talk about, the best way to do it. Yes, sir.
I already have part of that. I'll have all my 30 houses in land trust. However, the next step I'm just doing a 30 Schedule E's on my personal
Yeah, time. You want to add the second layer.
Then if I did this, I wouldn't do a personal return, but at the family limited partnership, am I still doing 30 Schedule E's?
You would file a partnership return for the properties, okay. And you'd get a K-1.
Okay, and in that partnership, like if I'm collecting rent, I just put all the rent on one, like I... Like instead of saying rent on property A, 10,000, rent on property 5,000, I just combine all in one lot.
No. So you will have a schedule similar to your E on a schedule K on the partnership return.
Okay. But I'm still doing 30 schedule E's at a partnership level. Okay. So I'm still going to do the same.
You're just doing it on a different return.
I'm just doing a different return. But it's not a 1040, it's a 1065.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Correct. Okay. Correct.
So, but it makes it more simple as far as it makes it more bulletproof.
Yeah, and less risk of audit.
So the details will still be the same, but they're on a family, on a partnership.
Yeah.
And then the partnership gives me a K.
Correct.
So it's the same numbers, just different.
Same numbers, different way to report it. And better protection, lower risk of what?
Thank you.
You got it. Hi. A trustee what? It's in the context it was argued in a court for estate planning tax. It's not that I wouldn't use it anyway. It's not illegal, like if you use it, you go to jail. It's not that type of illegal. It's just not recognized, so title companies may not insure transactions. But you have another alternative in Tennessee, which is called a series LLC, which can accomplish the same thing. The same thing. And it just fits in the bottom. The bottom is still the limited partnership, but instead of multiple LLCs, you'd have one series LLC. Okay? And that, again, if you get the program, we'll go over that in a Zoom. I'll explain exactly how to do that. Okay. Yes, sir.
Actually, somebody kind of how you set everything up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So when I buy a course after that,
we're going to have a Zoom, and during that, if I'm going to recommend what you do, and if you say,
I want to sell this.
Right.
Okay.
So does that scenario that you just explained, does that work for properties that are
No, with a loan. It doesn't matter.
Then I also have an LLC that I have some properties in my name and some that are working into the LLC that have my personal address attached to the LLC.
Yeah, that's no good.
So
we can fix that.
Yeah, can you have the LLC and then change it over to